Blog Talk Radio.
Excuse me, and good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association Blog Talk Radio Show. My name is Bilal Masadik Bynum, and I am speaking to you live from my studio here in Washington, D.C., along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings and assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Alaikum salam, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Great, great. Doing well. And yourself, my brother?
Everything's very well, alhamdulillah.
Yeah.
And when we say alhamdulillah.
Another beautiful edition of our broadcast.
Yes, yes. Welcome to another edition. I just spoke, unfortunately, to our dear sister Aisha, our national director, and COVID is continuing to come and go with her. So she's just
called.
Yes,
I've been keeping her in prayer, brother. Definitely been keeping her in prayer.
That's what I wanted to remind you and any of our listeners to keep our dear sister in our prayer. And because for some reason she can't shake this COVID thing. I think this is about the fourth time it's hit her and so forth. So,
great.
But anyway, because she looks forward to this program like we all do.
All right, we miss her education that she's given us on disaster preparation, you know.
Yes, yes, of course. This is we miss her in so many ways. So, but anyway, I wanted to inform you of that. Let me go ahead and say hello to our state director in Delaware, Brother Rashid. I see you with us.
Yes, sir. Assalamu
alaikum, Brother Rashid.
Good to be here, man. I'm actually talking to you from the car today, so I'm listening in, brother.
All right. Well, just stay mute because we want you to participate with us this evening. So I am going to keep your mic open along with Brother Aziz, and we will all speak as we see a need to comment. Of course, we're going to be continuing our talks, and that is the power of the black dollar and, of course, banking. We have to continue talking about banking because, again, we have to be in control of our own monies. And the only way we can be in control of our monies is to make certain our monies is going into our own financial institutions where we have a voice in how the money is to be distributed back into the community. We don't have that option because we're dealing with putting our monies in white banks. And white banks have nothing to do with African-Americans other than taking their monies. But as far as African-Americans being on any board of directors of the bank or having any voice as to where the activities of the bank is the African-American concern. No, they, again, simply take our monies. But once we deposit our monies into their banks, they use those monies to advance their own communities, their own businesses, their own medical centers, their own schools, whatever they need in their communities. They have their monies and our monies and everybody else's monies, but we're concerned about our monies. And when I say our monies, I'm talking about the power of that black dollar, because we're talking trillions of dollars. Our consumer spendings alone was $1.9 trillion. And then in FOI 23, and that would be the fiscal year of 23. Our consumer spendings alone was $1.9 trillion. $1.9 trillion. You are now talking about I'm adding upwards because of 1.9. I'm so close to the 2 until I cannot go down with 1.9 when it comes to close to the two. So what are we saying? Almost $2 trillion, a tenth of a percentage, and we would be talking about $2 trillion in consumer spendings. That's how big our monies are, and if we was putting those monies into an African American bank or a bank where we had a voice on the board as to how the monies is to be distributed, then now there would be fairness, but we would be able to be in control of a huge amount of dollars that we spend. And like I said, that was the consumer spendings. And the brothers, they'll be coming on in a few minutes, and they know some of the statistics of how the monies were spent. So, but regardless as to who or how the monies were spent, African Americans spent the monies, but we wasn't on the receiving end of those spendings because we don't have businesses that we own in our own communities. And of course, we don't have the privilege of the banks loaning monies back to the black community. Like I said, they take our monies and their monies, and they advance their own communities. And believe me, we have made the Caucasians in the United States the richest peoples in the entire world. And we have been sustaining that type of economical power for the Caucasians for hundreds of years. And so I think it's time that we put our own portfolio together, our own financial portfolio, and we put that together collectively, and then we take a look at it. The large amount of monies that African Americans come in contact with, that comes through us, but because we don't have financial institutions to deposit our monies, then we don't realize how much money is coming through those financial institutions, and of course the white banks, and of course how much money those banks are making with our deposits, and those deposits should be going into black banks where so distributing the monies back into our communities, and now we can start creating our own businesses, our own car dealerships, our own retail stores, our own hospitals, our own whatever it takes that we need or what we had. And I say had because during the time of the Black Belt Wall Street Business Associations that was formed by Booker T. Washington and his business associates, including the Greenwood Business District of Tulsa, of the old Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was named by Black Belt Wall Street. We give them the name Black Wall Street because they were able to, from that oil that the white folks took from us, and they still own those refineries even today. When we own what was ours, it was that type of that type of assets we was able to build the Black Belt. And the Black Belt ran all the way from Texas to Virginia, but you would have to include Delaware and Maryland, because that's where the highest amount of slaves were put in this country. And but during the time of the Black Belt, all of these financial institutions, and some of them still exist even today, that we hopefully will be discussing also in our tonight's program by those who have done the research. And so we must start by depositing our monies in our own financial institutions, our own credit unions, our own banks. And the ones that we have, we should be using them. And the ones that we, because we need many, 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 many more, which means that we would have to start opening and incorporating credit unions, banks, and even insurance companies, because that's the power of our dollar. It can do that, but it can't do right now. It can't do anything for us because we're just being robbed by the society, and I start with the federal government because they know this is going on. The Federal Reserve knows that a huge amount of the monies that they intake every day and that they clear in their federal houses, and when they clear this monies and it goes through the exchange commissioner, and the exchange commissioner is the one who is responsible for sending monies back to the community as to which it came from. Well, our churches, and when you start talking about $1 trillion, you can include the monies that we deposited in the banks from our churches, right, as an additional figure. So, consumer spending's over $2 trillion or close to $2 trillion. And now we know our churches is right there with over $1 trillion within itself. So, and then, of course, we go into something we can't control, and which is taxation. Federal, state, local, county, whatever taxes, stations we have to pay, we pay, but it doesn't come back to advance our communities. It goes to advance the white communities. So this is why we can't stop white supremacy, but we certainly can take and start our own and start realizing our own black power and start using those black powers, and in this case, your monies. Starting with your monies, putting that as to where you are controlling your currency rather than putting them in these white banks that tells you that they can't give you a business loan. You can't have a car dealership. You don't have enough monies, and you have plenty of monies. In other words, in order for you to get your monies, we might consider giving you a grant. That's all you ever heard when you started talking about monies to the black man. Well, when we deposited those huge monies in your banks and your credit unions and wherever we put our monies, it wasn't a grant, it was a deposit. So why do we need a grant in order to come and collect our monies that should have been sent back to our communities after it went through that Federal Reserve? But no, it was sent to a white bank, and the communities in the zip code that it was sent to was all controlled by white folks. Black folks don't have their own zip codes. Their zip codes come under those that say that we own you. You are a commodity that makes monies for us. It's something, brothers and sisters, that we can control. But it starts with, again, the power of that dollar that we bring in. So that's my opening comments. And, of course, we're now going to go to our state directors. Let me pull up one more that I see here. We'll include her. And so, Brother Aziz, like always, we will always start with you because, again, the same way I opened the show, you could be opening the show, either one of us. But we have to do it one at a time. So I would say it's your turn, Brother Aziz.
Well, thank you, Brother Bilal, and greetings to our audience. Now, I'm looking to Brother Rashid and the rest of our audience. And I wanted to say in opening tonight, our show is about business, promoting business in the African-American community, having African-Americans do business among themselves as well as network among themselves. But along with that, doing business with one another, politics is also involved. And we're at a point, too, where in the political point of doing business, you know, the politicians that we see and put in office and that, they have a lot to do with these programs that Brother Bilal had brought up earlier, and assuring that funding get into the African-American communities where it's needed most, and those funds are being able to be put to use to help the community move forward in many, many ways. A lot of those ways would be, you know, programs for our youth, educational programs for our youth in the community, but also, you know, our housing in our African-American communities where you see a lot of run-down housing and that, the houses haven't been kept up because it's not that the people couldn't, on a certain level, pay to get their homes repaired. It's just that the opportunities and programs out there that are offered to the Caucasians are not offered to our people, and they're not made aware of them. And it's almost like it's looking for a needle in a haystack when our people go to look for programs that help them get accomplished the things that they need to improve our neighborhoods. So I'm starting off by saying, you know, different elections are coming up now, and African Americans that are going to the voting polls, as well as any other people that think that their politicians should do more than just be sitting up there passing laws, that they don't take a consensus on with their voters. They just pass these laws. Well, you know, I'm concerned that laws that exist and maybe getting ready to be passed that concern funds going into different communities and how they help communities grow, as well as plans for what's going to be happening in the communities we live in. You know, in many ways, and I'm going to bring up a place I know at home, not around the areas I know where I live at night. I'm from a place called Fairhope, Alabama, and the biggest city close to us is Mobile, which is very close. But a lot of my relatives that were born and raised that live over in Mobile, where they live, when the freeway was put in and being put made to make it more convenient for traffic to ease through Mobile, well, the exits off of that freeway were put in the Caucasian neighborhoods where there wasn't no business before, wasn't no thriving businesses, and now businesses are thriving because that vacant areas in that where they put the freeway exits, now businesses are popping up along the gas stations, blah, 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 all of that. But the other way where people could get off going to the African-American neighborhood where there were businesses thriving, the neighborhood was thriving, and now that's cut off. You got to go a couple exits down now to go back where the old exit used to be because it's cut off. You can't get that way no more. So these are the type of things that some of the things we should be looking for in talking to our politicians as well as our community leaders, because they have a lot to do with how businesses are running our community, how we get help with businesses in our community, as well as programs that can help establish other opportunities that help our neighborhoods grow. And the second thing I wanted to get into was the weather that's going on now around the country and that, and how it's devastating a lot of people's homes, their properties. They're out. They don't have nowhere to go again. And this is dealing with the program that our beloved sister Aisha Abdul-Ali would be doing on the second half of our program. Matter of fact, that's what the second half of our program was about. And right now, we see the need for emergency medical supplies all throughout Texas, all through Alabama, and Mississippi and Louisiana is showing vehicles and all that being caught up with these flash floods being overturned. One lady in the area, I don't remember right off now, I was looking at the news this evening, and she had been on her car for 18 hours in the middle of a stream bed, well, a river now, and heading, and nobody knew where she was. You know, no one come in that area for that length of time. And it just so happened to show on the news where the helicopter came in and was extracting her off the top of that vehicle, which was upside down. She was on top of her own vehicle, but it was turned upside down. It was like, so what I'm saying is, other than that preparation, you can't prepare for something like that. But being cut off, no electricity, having survival foods and things like that, that's important when it's a cold time of the year here in the country. And that's one of the things that our program offers when the kind of information that's going to help our community out, as well as help people in our community that own businesses be prepared for something like this if it's going to happen. And now a third part that I want to just touch on lightly is the big organizations in our community that could help our program move along in promoting African-American financial institutions, African-American banks, African-American credit unions. And that's the biggest, we know the biggest amount of our money that's in the African-American community is circulated through the church. We have to get to people that's in the church, the leaders in the church, to start doing business with African-American banks. And now how do you do that? We have to talk to the membership. The members have got to want to do that. We just can't rely on the minister himself, you know, leading his people in that direction. This is a thing that our people got to see a common need to do, that it's necessary. And, you know, and we're going to come up with ways and have to come up with ways to help awaken our people to the necessity of this, because just the way it was fighting for our civil rights, it had to be like a snowball rolling down a snow-covered hill. It just got bigger and bigger as it rolled down to when it got down to the bottom, it was a huge, huge snowball. And I think it's the same way that we're going to have to do and have been doing all along. When Brother Bilal established the New Africa Blog Talk radio show 10 years ago, it was for the purpose of what we're talking about now. And it's been a slow, slow growing period because there are so many multiple distractions out there that have us take our monies and just deposit them in the most convenient place to deposit our monies. And they're there when we can get them whenever we want them, at an ATM machine, whether it's one we have to pay at or one we don't have to pay at. And that's primarily what we're concerned about until sometimes we get a little older. We want to deposit our monies in the bank a little longer than 30 days or something like that, paying bills and doing whatever, giving the bank a little time to make a money off as soon as the money's put in there. Sometimes we get older, and then you have a lot of young African-American young men and women that are financial conscious, and they do put their monies away in the savings and deposits and things like that, and IRAs. And so when we know this is going on, we have to try to convince our people that they can do this in African-American financial institutions, credit unions, or a bank. And in doing this, it's going to help something happen that we didn't realize could happen. And it's just doing a very little part, something that every one of us do primarily weekly, and that is go to the bank. Go to the credit union, one of the two, or use an ATM card that you have from the bank or you have from the credit union. And that's all you think about. And it's no sweat off your back or nothing. Well, the same way it is when we do this with African-American financial institutions. And if we don't have some in our state, then we could participate in some that's not in our state, that's in other places. And Brother Rashid on one of our directors out of Delaware, he joined one of those institutions, which may tell us about later on as he's found out more information about it. It's an online banking institution down in Atlanta, Georgia. And I do believe Andrew Young and some other brothers started this service, online banking, but we'll find out from someone that's a member of that institution. But that's what I'm saying. It doesn't take any, it doesn't hurt us to do something like that. It helps us more than one could imagine. as an African American participating in something where it, you're not going out here when the like the Malcolm X film come out, everybody is out buying a hat with an X on it. The guy who produced that film, Spike Lee, said he lost hundreds of millions of dollars because the Asians and the Orientals moved in on that, and they started producing these hats with the X on it, and which was cool looking and not the same one as Spike Lee's hat, 20 acres and, or 40 acres and a mule logo and all that. But this is something of that same magnitude when I'm talking about how people went out and bought into getting hats or T-shirts with the X on, that Malcolm X thing representing that, because it was a fad going on. Well, this isn't a fad. We go put our monies into an African-American bank and leave them there, do our finance through that bank, that credit union. We're talking about something that no one thought was possible, that we could get the majority of, like Brother Bilal Bynum said, of the $1.9 trillion that has been spent in consumer purchases. Just to have that kind of money flow through our banking institutions, it would be a tremendous upliftment in our community, because it would lead back to what statisticians throughout the country and now the world know, that if you ever let those people get themselves together, and I'm talking about African Americans, if you ever let them people get themselves together and turn that money back into the community, it will literally be a nation inside of a nation. Can you imagine that? A nation inside of a nation. That kind of wealth flowing on, not just a nation inside of a nation, the fifth or the sixth largest nation on the planet Earth, within, inside the largest. Wow. That's like you having a body, and then what keeps your body going is your heart. That's like being the heart of the financial institution in America. Fight with ease, with ease. So this kind of talk is not the kind of talk that one mouth can be quieted like mine or Bilal's or Brother Bashir or Sister Bernice or any other director. This is the kind of mouth you can't quiet down. You quiet one down, the other one's going to open up. But this is what we're talking about in freeing ourselves up. That's the first thing. Shackle slavery is over for African Americans. It's been over for a long time. Ain't no damn handcuffs or no hand shackles on your feet. The shackles have been put on your brain, and they've been put on in a way that you don't want to do for self. You want somebody else to do for you. This is an easy thing to do for self. When you go to the ATM machine, go to the ATM machine that your bank or your credit union supports, because your money in that is going to that bank or credit union. So, you know, this is something so easy to do, and we want to see if we can stop making it so difficult. It should not be as difficult as it has been, but the difficulty has been in getting the minds of the people to accept this form of freedom, this type of liberty and freedom that they will find nowhere else on the earth by just doing something that simple. And there's no other way. There's no other way for us to find freedom here in America as African Americans unless we do it through the financial way. The financial liberty, the financial freedom. That's the only way we could do it, going through there. I remember one time it was in the New York, well, it was all over in the papers and that, but the New York Times really put it out there that Louis Farquhar, Minister Louis Farquhar of the Nation of Islam, he got $5 million from Gaddafi, Muammar Gaddafi, former leader over in Libya. Well, he said when he got that finance, that check for the $5 million, Of course he wanted to put in a black bank. He said there wasn't no black financial institutions in the Chicago area that would accept his money. They wouldn't, because they had been threatened by different entities that if they did, they would have a examination or a they would have their account investigated to the point that they might close them down. They were threatening them. And as soon as he found out that that wasn't going to happen, no African-American bank was scared to take that check, $5 million. He took it over to the Jewish bank, and boom, everything went smooth and all that, and that's what we had to do business with until he got his money out. You know, he just didn't cash it and got it all. He had to set up an account. And so that was a threat for us because that was coming from somewhere else. But we're right here. Can't nobody stop or threaten no one like that. And they can't threaten you or I to do that. So my hope and prayers would be that we can all do this, because this is not asking too much of any of our African-American listeners or anyone that's listening to our program throughout the world, where your people are struggling financially to get established wherever you're living, in whatever country you're living in, and you're having a hard time doing that. Well, this is the way to go about it, with the surety that it will bring about some success, especially when you have control over that institution. There are many of us, again, that just want to have a checking account to be able to write a check or use ATM when you get ready. And that's a good thing. So you don't want, you're not ready to save money, like just save. You just want a checking, and you'd be able to use the ATM to get your car, you know, finances out whenever. That's good, because if you got that with an African-American bank, you're still contributing towards the goal that we're trying to achieve. And that's turning that $1.9 trillion around, where it's at least going to circulate through our community one time in a big way, a one big bang, like that theory of the Big Bang Theory. And it's come up with everything we see now. That's a ha, ha, ha. But, you know, so this is some of the things that I wanted to start out talking about. And Brother Delisle, I didn't want to take up much time. We can go back to that soon. We let a few more of our directors come on in and give us some of their good news. And thank you again, brothers.
And thank you for your comments. I wanted to go, but let me see. Makes for sure. I'm not for sure, but I am. Have to take a look. Sister Aisha, are you with us?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everyone.
Assalamu alaikum. Good to hear that voice.
Thank you. It's good for you to hear my voice. So thank you.
Great.
I'm going to come directly to you because I know you could. You could be with us the entire show. You could be with us as long as you can. But I do want to welcome your comments before we open it up to the other directors that we'll be going to right after we hear your comments.
Well, thank you so much. Of course, you know, this has been an interesting time. I am fortunately and very thankful to be recovering from my fourth bout with COVID-19 since 3 years ago. So I thank Allah. I'm very thankful to not completely recover from this last bout, but I'm on my way, you know. And, you know, and as I was thinking about what it is that prevents us as a society from thinking in terms of disaster preparedness. And I read an article lying in bed And it clearly, this article in particular, talked about the apathy. People are apathetic regarding disasters and disaster preparedness and readiness because it makes them feel very vulnerable. And people do not like to feel vulnerability. And I can understand that because as I talk to people in different parts of the U.S. and in different organizations, I understand that our vulnerability when it comes to disaster preparedness is that this is not something we were taught in elementary school. We were not taught it in the academic arena. And we as the people have always pretty much this, I'm talking about after, for our community, after integration. Before integration, it was a whole different ball game, and I'll mention that because I grew up doing segregation, and our lifestyle was different. But after integration, we joined a society that depended on the policymakers of the local government to protect our safety to some extent and to provide those services that we as a people had always provided for ourselves. And so it became easy and somewhat relaxed. And so now we have three generations of growing up that way and being dependent on the services of local government and expecting local government to provide those services for us. So when we talk about disaster preparedness, we are asking people to go back, take a step back, and be responsible for
Sister Aisha, you still with us?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So, and I think you missed a great part of what I was saying. I thought but what we would like to do is prepare our society, our broader society, especially our young, our new generation of adults in the area of disaster preparedness, because this is essential. If we do not take responsibility for ourselves and our communities and our loved ones, many of us are going to perish because the local governments, the state governments, and the federal governments do not have enough resources to provide for the total society in the event of a natural disaster. And if we follow what takes place in the news, we're being told there are not enough resources available. The infrastructures in these local governments and these states cannot handle the pressure of a natural disaster within the community structure. You know, the infrastructure becomes overburdened. Trying to supply our transportation, our hospitals, our schools, our water, our sewer, our electricity, telecommunication, all of these elements that can contribute to infrastructure in a local government. So, folks, I say to you wholeheartedly, we've got to change the way we think, or many of us are not going to make it through a natural disaster. We've got to take responsibility for our families and for our communities. Because if I know in the area I live in, Durham, North Carolina, if a major disaster occurs, and it's going to occur at some point, the local government, as astute as they are, and they are some fine people, and they are concerned people, they will be the first to say, we do not have the capability in our infrastructure to maintain the community and to bring the community back to sustainability. The infrastructures in many of those local governments will be practically destroyed. So you have to think in terms of being on your own. So I know you probably didn't ask for that kind of introduction, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, but I've been off the air for, what, 3 weeks or so, and I just have so many things to say. So much has taken place in our world as far as natural disasters. So I'll come back, and if you have any questions or want me to continue on any of this conversation, please just let me know. Okay.
Thank you. Your show starts in about 20 minutes.
Yes.
So, and if you're able to conduct your show, we will be back with you and giving you back your show in 20 minutes.
But sounds great.
In the meantime, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, LLC, we'll continue to do what we do in our first hour, and we're going to get back to talking about the power of our black dollar and the importance of having financial institutions in our community. Because, like you said, when it comes to mitigating certain circumstances, I think this is a way that we can help to mitigate our financial circumstances. So thanks. So, again, we look forward to coming right back with you, and hopefully we're glad to hear from you so you can continue your show.
Thank you.
Brothers and sisters, I want to, again, I could emphasize and continue, and I won't stop putting emphasis on the importance of opening or depositing our monies in our own financial institutions. And when you start talking about the black banks that we do have, and someone says the bank is in Alabama, or somebody said the bank is in Texas, or somebody said the bank is in Illinois. It makes no difference where the bank is incorporated. You can take one black bank that may have started in Alabama, but if it has the right depositors, you can have that one bank that started in Alabama in every state, every black state in this country. That's just right. A matter of making deposits into the financial institution. All of these financial institutions are regulated once they are incorporated as a bank or as a credit union. There are regulations that governs all of them. So the important thing is not so much where the bank is located. The important thing is that we put our monies into these banks so that these banks will be able to acquire assets, and those assets that they would be able to require would have to come from us. Because banks cannot make monies by setting no monies, just by having money set in their deposits, they ain't making a dime. But when they have your deposits and they can take your deposits, and now you can buy, open businesses by saying that I want to open a car dealership. I want to open whatever type business. I want to open a nursing home, whatever type business, a real estate a developer, a title company, whatever type business you're talking about opening, the banks would be more than happy to help you to open those businesses if they had the assets of your deposits, so they can now get you in business, because getting you in the business means that now you have loans with these banks, and that's how the banks make their monies, is that loaning monies to you or to the communities as to which their deposits are coming from. So that's why that's that circulations of your dollars. You can't circulate your dollars by putting them into white banks, because white banks don't have nothing to do with you after they take your monies. So therefore, put your monies into your own banks, and now you have the voice and you have the growth of the growth of values from having your monies in the banks and the bank working with the communities. Now I want to go director in Delaware. We're going to start, I guess we'll start with Sister Swan, and then Brother, take you to Brother Rashid. Sister Swan.
Hello?
Yes, Director.
Oh, yeah.
You're on the air.
Oh, I just want to say that last week, thank you for introducing me officially to our State of Delaware director, and we have met. What a blessing it is to be in the cooperative setting with such a fine brother as Brother Rashid. Our preliminaries have already started for Delaware. Of course, that has been just 1 week. And so we have undertaken the introductory part of what we will be doing, and it is going to be excellent. Of course, we're not going to reveal those things that we're doing until they are well underway. But I must say, with Brother Rashid and myself at the helm of this, and with the blessings of the Creator, we're on to a magnificent start that is going to very much bless our community here in Delaware. But I just wanted you to know that we have started. The outline is stupendous, and it's going to have great results. We're working, as I mentioned last week, let's do this baby steps, a little bit at a time. Remember, when we have children, we don't give them a steak when they're born. We give them milk, and then they grow into something greater, and that is just what we are now doing. We're starting with our baby steps, which are quite strident, and of course we're going to go into something that we know is going to be a great program for our residents here in the State of Delaware.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for an introduction, and we look forward to your business plans. We look forward to knowing more about your business plans. But in that case, let me go to Brother Rashid, and maybe he and see what he has to share with us as far as the business.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me again. I apologize any noise you hear in the background, because again I'm in the car, but I think the biggest thing that I've just really been internalizing, and I'm praying that the listening audience is also internalizing is the power of group economics. You know, individually, if I have a lot of money and I put it in the bank, it doesn't have nearly the amount of power as if we collectively as a group do it across the country, across the world. I have a colleague of mine who is from Ghana, and a lot of people over in Ghana are very open, and you know, we're doing a lot of business with people all over the world, and that's the beauty of the times that we live in, is the economy now is not just local or nationally, it's global. And I think one of the things that I'm praying for is that, you know, it's a beautiful thing to have thoughts and a plan and all of those things, but it really means nothing until we individually and collectively take the first step. And one of the things that I'm really going to put a lot of emphasis on, it's been a couple of months ago, I had a meeting I attended at a church out in Wilmington, and the more I hear you all talking about, you know, the big boom in it are really the churches, is I'm going to do my very best to really start networking at a lot of the churches just to kind of sprinkle the seasoning on the food that we're talking about, just to hopefully entertain their thinking, to at least be something they're thinking about. Because, you know, it's good for us to say these things, and there may be a few that listen, there may be many that don't listen, but one thing we can definitely do, and I can definitely do, and all of us can definitely do, because all of us have relatives who go to church. And, you know, that's not just here in Delaware. I have friends, relatives, fraternity brothers, family members all over the country. So I'm really going to do my part, God willing, inshallah, as we say, to get everybody at least conscious of the fact that this is something not only we should be talking about, but taking the first step. Brother Aziz had mentioned, yeah, I did. The first night I heard you guys talk about it, I looked up several financial institutions, and the one that really caught my eye was, and it was actually, it's actually called Greenwood. And you, if you're familiar with Black Wall Street, you know, Greenwood, I mean, that is it. So it is a financial institution. They'll tell you they're not a bank, but they work with a bank, and I don't have my notebook with me, but I have it at the house, and I had written down the name of that bank. But it's just like all of the other banks, very simple to do online, opening up an account. You can open up a checking or savings, both. They actually even have investing on there, where people who are into the stock market, which I have my own Charles Schwab account that I invest in. I think it's very impressive for anybody who's even thinking about investing on a small scale. They show you the ticker symbols, their NASDAQ ticker symbols, what, you know, what the stocks cost that day, et cetera. And getting started is as simple as, you know, a dollar in some of those investments. So I just want to encourage us all, you know, it's good for us to constantly talk about it, but the next step, I mean, we really need to collectively talk about, okay, what's the next step in starting it? And I mean, I opened up an account, but my intention is to open up other accounts as well with other Black-owned banks. So I'm praying that, you know, we can push one another to take the first step, because a lot of times I've seen, and I'm not saying in what we're doing, but as a people, I've always seen us, man, we plan and we plan and we plan and we plan, and we never really get a lot of things going because we constantly talk about it and plan it. So I encourage each listener, I encourage you guys, I encourage myself to daily be thinking of, you know, the village. And that's one of the things when we were in Al-Kibulan, when we were in Africa, it was always about the village, not just about me. Here in the United States, unfortunately, we've been trained and somewhat conditioned, and we're in the matrix of what can I get? It's me. And that's how, if you look at the other people who are doing well in this country, the Mexicans, the Jews, the Arabs, they use group economics. When I was in Birmingham, Alabama, and I was a recruiter at a school, we had an empty strip mall across the street. And I noticed some Mexicans. At first, I thought they were working on it. And there was three Mexican guys. All of a sudden, I saw five Mexican guys. All of a sudden, I saw 15 Mexican guys. And I said, man, that's a big family. And I talked with them, and they said, we're not related, but we're all Mexicans. Brothers they and sisters, they put their money together and ended up buying the whole strip mall. It ended up being maybe about 35 of them. But all they do is put their money together to tackle a project. And I think that's something I was thinking about what Sister Bernice Swan had said, that we need to tackle things one at a time. So, I mean, if we're going to concentrate on something, let's find one thing we're going to concentrate on. If it's okay, let's put our money in black financial institutions. Then as a group, let's take that step. If it's okay, let's do the Black Friday where we, every Friday we spend our money with only black businesses. Let's pick up those mindsets and mentalities and start implementing them, because my concern is always if we continue to just plan and plan and plan and plan, we'll never get there. And so I'm just praying for the group as a whole that, you know, we're not going to have everybody that sees things the way we see them. If you look at any black organizations that meant for the good of our people, the government always found a way to break them up, and unfortunately they used us to do it. And we still live in those times with that mindset where, as beautiful as what you guys have set up with New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, I would not be surprised, and we know there are people listening who don't mean you all well, don't mean us well, but I really believe this is a divine thing. And if we really put our energies into it for the good of us and we and not just me and I, then I think we can get a lot done. So you all have definitely inspired me in meeting you, Brother Bilal. Like I told you, man, it was, when we met, we didn't know one another, and it was meant to be. And from that point on, I feel like I've known you all my life. I've only talked with and heard Sister Bernice Swan just twice, and in talking with her, I feel like I've known her all my life. And the wisdom that you all bring to the table, Brother Aziz, Sister Aisha, all of you, we have a great thing going, and I just want to encourage us all to really put all of our energy into it. It's not about, my dad used to say, you know, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. You can run it fast if you want to, but you better have some endurance. But I just pray that we do have somewhat, because we're so far behind as a people, as a collective group of people, that we place a sense of urgency on our marathon. And with that, I'll shift it back to you.
All right. Thanks so very much for both of your comments.
Yes, thank you.
Both of our directors out of the state of Delaware, and you can see they're constantly putting together business ideas and plannings that I think is going to help in the state of Delaware. And if it helps in Delaware, it'll help all over. So
that's
you guys,
right.
That's what our directors, that's why you are directors. And so again, thanks so much for what we're hearing. I want to continue and see if we have any directors. Do we have any directors from Oklahoma? Sister Williams.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters.
There she is.
Assalamu
alaikum.
Good to hear you. Good to hear you.
And good to be heard, brother. Look, I just want to say, Brother Bilal, my heart is happy that, you know, I'm so far from home, but I'm happy to hear your voice, and you're coming through loud and clear. So I was just making sure I was taking my, had been taken off mute. But I wanted to, I just want to say I personally believe we have earned and deserve a percentage of every penny this country receives. I mean, each and every dollar, we deserve a percentage of it in our own, for our own coffers. Because if we're still thinking that they're going to do something for us monetarily, it's not going to happen because they're too full of greed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Since we now know, you know, because as a child growing up, and I suppose some of you guys as well, you know, they skirted around the fact that slavery was the reason for the Civil War. But now that they have come out and confessed that with their own mouths, then let's just say, you know, where did the spoils of that war go? Because once war is declared, then you have what is known as, and I mean, there's a lot of things that go on in between the point of and the ending of, but then they have what they call the spoils of war. So we need to know what happened to those spoils. None of those spoils went into my pocket, and I'm certain that none of it still has gone into any of our you guys' pockets, not who look like me. So we need to find out how, you know, Brother Bilal, you had spoken earlier about, you know, getting something for our own, because I heard Brother Rashid a few minutes ago speaking about how the Mexican brothers and this, that, and the other get. Hey, we've been, as they say, been there, done that. They had 45 blocks of collective community getting together and investing, I'll say. And they went through those 45 blocks. But see, they don't mind those Mexicans building up their strip mall, because look at how they did us. You know, we thought 1965 was going to last forever. We thought we were going to be black power and talk about the devils and the pigs and all like that. We thought that lifestyle was going to be from now on. We thought, you know, even with those old hippies, you can't find a hippie today. So they'll let them build their strip malls, and they'll let them build up their manicure places and all like that. Because when you get down to it, these Caucasians, they're not going to give up on this country. Where are they going? So they don't mind them coming in. We built up too. But they're not concerned about what we're building. They like that, because it's even less that they have to do when they start redlining them. They're not going to treat, go ask Cochise. They're not going to treat them any differently. But at any rate, we also need to make sure that we stay awoke. What they say, stay awake, stay woke. Mm-hmm. Because this country, brothers and sisters, it's standing on shaky ground. We are in the miry clay. So we got to start telling some truth, because the truth has become lies. These people are living truth as lies, and that won't happen. That won't sustain. That won't last, brothers and sisters. That's not gonna take us to where we need to be. I don't know what's gonna happen, but if they don't put some brakes on this man's mouth, it's gonna be a real ugly situation. And that I would just say, stay woke, stay aware. You know, be vigilant about what we're doing, but don't let a whole lot of people in your business and watch your back. Because this thing, because with the voting, I don't even know how that's going to be in November. because these people, they have become so paranoid. I mean, it's just too much going on, and they can't handle it because of them. You know, when we were children, our parents and used to tell us about telling a little white lie. But look, these little white lies have grown into major catastrophes because you can never go back and redo the lie because you got to tell another lie on the lie you just told. Wherein if you're dealing with truth stands on its own. So brothers and sisters, the only thing I can say is let us be aware of what's going on around us. Let us, you know, look out for each other as best we know how. And, yes, come together because, you know, my justice for the black man in America, I've already said we need to become a country within a country. But we've got to become an independent country within a country. We can't afford to take their word anymore. And if the Hispanic brothers, the Mexican brothers knew like I'm saying right now, like we know, they'd be getting themselves some insurance because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take some independent living in this one country because they're not considering any of the things that we've contributed. The only thing they've got for us is hell and a jail cell. So you brothers and sisters, stay vigilant. Keep loving each other just like I love you. And help somebody along the way if you can. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam. Thanks so much, Sister Williams, our Oklahoma State Director. Thanks so much for your comments, and we look forward to your continuing participation. Brothers and sisters, I want to now go to a person who has been working with us, and I can see they are still faithfully coming in. They're not state directors yet, but we... who knows, they may consider participating as leaders with us. But anyway, I'm going to go out to Norfolk, Virginia. And Brother Damien, are you with us? Brother Damien out of Washington, out of Norfolk, Virginia, are you with us?
How are you doing, brother? How's everyone doing today? I was listening in. I was listening for the past hour or so, and you know, I heard a lot of good things. I wasn't going to speak. I was just listening while I was working and listening at the same time. And I heard a lot of interesting things. Concerning the banking and how we need to use our funds in banking and. Not only and with the church and but not only that, we also, it's everything that has to be touched. You know, it takes a lot of involvement with a lot of different figures. When I say that, I'm talking about persons. Your like the brother said, your pastors and. The banking industry and the state and local government, community colleges and things like that. Because when Sister Joyce was talking about getting your piece of the pie, that's when you go into making sure that you have your elected officials, you know, in place. So when the pie is being divided, then you know that you can get your piece because there are funds that are made available through the federal government, and like you say, we don't know where those funds are, when they can be allocated, or when they're ready to be dispersed. We don't know. We only find out the third year, and then after that, all the funds are gone. Because normally, funds aren't appropriated for no more than 5 years, so at a time. So. They'll fund it for 5 years, and we'll find out the last year the last month of the last year that there are funds for these type of programs. So, and that's the people of pie that we're talking about, because a lot of our politicians, and I think someone said that earlier, a lot of our politicians try to stay in the forefront, like your man said that he loved, you know, Donald Trump, the gentleman from South Carolina. So I'm not, you know, so it's keep your eye on the money when it comes to federal spending in your local area, in your state government. When those funds come, you have to find out who is the person in your local government who handles those funds where your interest is. Whatever your interest is, find out where those funds are coming from and how you can, get in contact with the office who handle those funds. Now, the best way to do that, I found, is to contact your local senator if you're interested in one particular thing. If you're gonna go broad, you know, so it's a very broad to do that. Yes, sir. So if you're trying to get your piece of the pie for that one particular thing that you have on your mind, I've always called my senator or representatives and let them do the work for you. That's what they're paid for. That's what the people in the offices that work for the state, your federal, for the Senate and the House of Representatives, that's what they get paid for. They get paid to work for you. When you call your senator's office or whomever, you say, I need to know whatever, whatever, whatever. They get back with you within 30 days. That's their job. Their job is to work for you. There are a lot of people who pay for lawyers. You don't have to pay for a lawyer if it has to deal with certain issues, especially if it deals with something civil. So a civil, if it's criminal, that may be different. But if it's something civil, you can go to your Senate, and if it's dealing with the company, you can go to them and see if that practice is correct. You don't have to spend money on the lawyers. That's what they're for. They're your lawyers. So when it comes to certain things, the pie is there, but it's just not divided equally. And, you know, I think putting the information out there to see, you know, to make sure that people know that, you know, to get your, we know how to get grants to go to school, right? Everybody knows how to go out and get that FAFSA form and complete the FAFSA form so we can go to school, because that's the most important thing for us anyway, is to try to get some type of education. So we know how to fill out the FAFSA form. But there are so many other forms you have to fill out. Years ago, that SF-171 form that you had to fill out to work for the government was 26 pages. I don't know. That sucker was, I mean, it was seriously like 9 feet long. That was a long joker. And most African-Americans didn't want to fill that sucker out, you know. So, and you know, but back then, white people were handing in resumes. They didn't have to fill them out. We had to fill them out, but a lot of them didn't have to fill them out. They just waved them on in, you know. So, but it's knowing where and who to talk to, but it never should be a win. You never should have to stay in the line and say, well, you can't talk to them until, you know, this. It should never be a win. It should never be a W-H-E-N. It should never be a win. Well, you can't talk to them right now because we're doing this. No. You have 30 days to answer my question. I have a problem with this. You have 30 days to give me an answer to this problem that I'm having. So, you know, there are a lot of things that we can do. Like you said, you know, and that's basically when you're talking to someone and it's word of mouth. And I do a lot of that word of mouth, you know, when I hear someone, you know, talking, I can be in the grocery store and somebody, you can be in line and, you know, listen to someone. And you can say, well, you know, hey, you can do this, this, or the other. You can do this, or you can do that. I used to work for child support, so I could say, hey, you can do this, or you can do this. You don't have to do that, but you can do this. You know, I used to work at the community college. You can do this. You know, so when you have your ears open, when you're in the store and you have your ears open, don't allow, I think somebody say, to continue the lie. You know, and you don't have to have a large audience. You can have an audience of one or two. Or so when you're standing, when you hear a lie and you know the truth, just share the truth. And you know, so I didn't expect to see her, but that's all I have to say. But I thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak. And assalamu alaikum, and I hope all of you have a good evening. And speaking to you all.
Brother Bilal.
Yes, Aisha. I'm sorry, Sister Aisha. Go right ahead. Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead. Yes.
Brother Bilal, I have only, Bond is very brief. On the project that I'm working on, thank you last week for presenting the banks, the black banks and credit unions. And of those, there were 25 that were given. And, of course, part of my project will be towards reaching out to those banks. Now,
yes.
The states are Alabama, Arkansas, California, the District of Columbia, Florida, Georgia, Kansas, Kentucky, Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. Primarily,
yes,
I would like to know the 25 states that I did not have information for so that I can see as close as I can get to the 50 states, even if there are none in those other remaining 25. If I've missed someone, please let me know. If I missed the state and the black banks or credit unions in your state, because that's part of what I will be working on. And to address me, it would be lowercase lifetime associates at yahoo.com. Thank you.
Yes, I suggest Brother Aziz is have a plan where not only will we be working with these banks that you just mentioned, but we're going to have we're planning on having them on, and that's something that you might work with him on, because that's something that he's already brought to my attention, and I know he's he has a plan to communicate directly with the principals of those financial institutions and have them to come on now that we'll be sharing what our objective is. And, of course, our objective is to have African-Americans to start depositing our monies into the financial institutions that we do have incorporated. And, of course, we know that there are hundreds and even thousands of new financial organizations that we would have to incorporate. I hate to put you guys on mute, because I do want you to participate with me, but if I hear the noise in the background, I have no other choice but put you on mute. Therefore, if you only person you're going to be able to hear is myself. You won't be able to hear. You won't be able to participate.
And I forgot to mention Virginia and Wisconsin are also in that count.
Oh yeah. Oh, by all means. As a matter of fact, every week we want to mention those banks. We don't never want to go without mentioning those banks, because like I said, it makes no difference which one of those banks you put your monies into. You don't have to be in that area. You don't have to you don't have to go into the bank to do business. You just have to make certain we're putting our monies into these black banks, because by putting the monies into the black banks, now you're talking about having deposits in the black communities that we've never had before. The white folks are getting them. And remember, we're not talking about just an average amount of monies. We're talking about the largest deposits that that can be made anywhere in the entire world. When it comes to the power of the African American dollar, our dollar power is about what make us, if we was an independent nation, we would be the fifth or the sixth richest nation in the entire world. And you're talking about all of Africa, all of Asia, all of the Europe. African Americans, when it comes to the monies that come into our hands, when the monies that we control, nobody control these monies but you, we are just about the most powerful as peoples. I know as far as being black peoples, no black peoples on this planet has the power of the African Americans and the power of their every country, everybody in the world wants to do business with African Americans because they know how powerful we've been, and they've been in touch with us. And I'm not talking about not only African countries, but European countries have invited us now because they can get in touch with us. Remember, we were a people that was the United States didn't want nobody getting in touch with us. They didn't want us to have avenues as to where we could take our dollar bills away from them. But everyone now that is realizing what we do for this country, and we ain't doing it because we want to do it. We're doing it because we're forced to do it, even though we don't realize we're being forced to do it. You are being systematically forced to make white folks rich. And it was like that when they bought you here as slaves. And systematically, the plans are to keep it like that. Brother Damien was talking about a few moments ago about the government and how the government has this, and in case, and nobody can say specifically what the government has, so you have to use terminologies like this and that and that and this, because when it comes right down to it, the federal government don't have a damn thing for African Americans. The only thing the federal government wants from African Americans, just like any other white supremacists, is to make is your monies, is to make you their contraband. We are no more than contrabands to these folks. And if you look at anything that says that the power of our dollars that they intake in their financial institutions, I don't care whether it's private industry, federal government, state government, it's only to take from black folks. It's never for black folks to receive anything. And this is no hypothetical message. We just left the federal government. By accident, the federal government sent us an invitation to come to the Department of Commerce, and this was just last month. And I said it was a mistake, but we made it in there. We were the only black folks, or the only black organization in this entire country that was at this meeting that the Department of Commerce had, and the reasons for having the meeting was Joe Biden, our president, because it's election time, wants to, again, paint a picture for African Americans, and he knows that picture for African Americans is economics. And so again, he tells African Americans that to come and not only Washington D.C. Washington D.C. is where all of the departments of his cabinets, the Department of State, Department of Health, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Homeland, all of the departments was at this meeting that Brother and Aziz and another brother attended here in Washington, D.C. And the first thing when we asked at that meeting, why isn't it that African Americans was not invited to come to this meeting? And we know we came in because when it came to Black Belt Wall Street, they didn't know who we were. But I think if they knew for one moment we was African Americans, they would have had some way to exclude us. But I can tell you now that we was there. The Department of State, the Department of Commerce, you name the department, every department that has anything to do with governing the United States, all of the department heads was at this meeting. And at this meeting, every department, the Department of Commerce, the Department of State, the Department of Agriculture, the Department, all of them told us that we have billions of dollars waiting to be allocated to the African-American community. This is the message Joe Biden is telling them to tell us. And every department have all these billions of dollars to go back to the stimulate the financial instability of the Black community, and we're going to bring that community up to financial par. We have all of these billions of dollars waiting to be allocated. Well, again, our question, and we heard them all. They presented the Department of Heads, but we had African Americans that was work for the government, GS-15s and what have you. And these black heads of governments, you see, if you work for the federal government, you can't just say it and do anything you want. If the government says we got something to allocate and this is the way it's going to be allocated, I don't care. You're GS-15, you're black, and you're the spokesperson for the department. You got to speak and speak for what Biden and the white folks want you to say. And so they know this. And so when we all got into a private setting as to where it was nothing but us as black peoples, and they took their GS-15 hats off, and they pleaded to us, and they told us that they said, brothers, look, you guys can say what we can't say. And so we're really looking for you guys.
Yep.
Telling the truth?
Yep,
right.
Looking,
yep, absolutely.
That's true. Yep, that's true.
We're looking for you guys to be the voice that we can't be, because we can't say anything. We have to say what the government wants us to say. And the government, again, it's all, like I said, Biden is putting on a show to for these black government employees to tell us, you know, all of these, my cousin Damien was just saying, you know, the government has this, mm-hmm. and you got form, and you got that form, and you that. There's a lot of reasons for those forms. One of them is to collect information on you. They don't, ain't got nothing to do with your ever thing from the government. But they, the more they can collect information from you, like you said, I'm filling out all these forms, giving you all this information on myself and about this and my. The government takes that stuff and they use what is important to them and they throw in the trash can what is not important to them. I can tell you right now, from being at that meeting and like we told them, we made, yes, we were that voice. We told those banks that works with the Small Business Administration. We asked them, see, you talk about grants. Why do we have to go, and like you said, white folks don't have to have grants. But here it is, the black man, whose money is just as big as the white man's money that's been put into the financial institutions. Why is it that the white man can have his communities? Why is it that he can have car dealerships when they sell a car for $50,000? They can call the bank and have the bank to finance the loan. And when the a loan goes through, the banks and the car dealerships, $70,000 because they add $20,000 onto the finance. And why isn't it that we can't do the same thing? It's our monies that they're lending the car dealerships and every other institution that opens up for business every day. But these businesses that they open up is all being supported by white folks. White folks taking all of everybody's monies to advance their own cause. And so, again, this is why it's so important that we, because remember, like I told those, like I told them, why do we have to come down and take a grant? Why isn't it that we can't walk into the bank and if we're putting in, if our churches is putting in hundreds of billions of dollars a week, and it takes hundreds of billions of dollars a week. You know how much money it takes to come up with $1 trillion? And so our churches alone, and like I told them, our churches alone is the biggest business in our country. That big business is giving donations from our communities, and those donations that are supposed to advance our communities is advancing the white communities. We ask them, why can't we come into these banks and take our monies out and have monies allocated to us? It's our monies. Why do we have to have a grant? Why do we have to borrow our own monies? And then you're going to deny us anyway, even borrowing the grant, because black folks don't get no grants. And these college grants, we know that ain't nothing but a ripoff, total ripoff.
Oh yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So again, that's why it's so important that when we say the name of the financial institutions that we do have that are incorporated and that are, and it is operational, we should be putting our monies into these financial institutions, because by putting monies into their banks or their credit unions, now they have monies as to where they can create assets, and assets is something that is is something that you have to create. You have to create the value. And so by having putting monies into your own banks, banks can't make no money just by sitting on your monies. When you put monies into your own banks, now the bank wants you, the person who put the monies in the bank, they want you to go in and open a business. They're going to help you to go and open a business, because the business that you open, they are part owners until you pay them back. So you have assets by having the business. The bank have assets by loaning you the monies for you to have the business. This is ongoing. This is going to every time. So That's what happens when you're talking about the growth of your community. But your community cannot grow if you're not in charge of your monies. And we give our monies away by putting our monies in the white banks, because once the white banks get them, and like we told them at the Department of Commerce, you guys take our monies, and then we're not on your board of directors. We're not on the bank's board of directors. We don't have any voice with the banks. We don't have any ownerships with the banks. The banks don't even want us to come through the front door. So, again, why, and we asked them, why are you stealing our monies? And you've been doing it for hundreds of years. So, and the only way it wasn't done was during the time of Black Belt Wall Street. But we know you intentionally started a war against black folks because they was becoming so economically powerful. You don't want black folks becoming economical power because, again, like you said, if we became an economical power, white folks lose. I'll shut up now. I'm going to turn it over to you in just a second, and I want to stimulate conversation. But, again, that's why it's so important that we take ownership, and that biggest ownership, yes, is the biggest business in our community. The biggest and the richest business in our community is our churches. Our churches are making white folks filthy rich. We got to change it. Yes, brothers and sisters, I'm opening the floor up, so whoever wants to speak, I know Sister Aisha, I'm turning it over to you, I'm sorry. But
I have a question.
What happens when we start getting into the power and start realizing and seeing the power, and like I said, this thing about the federal government don't give a damn about us. We're not even accounted for. So, again, the floor is open.
My question, and I so appreciate the enlightenment you're giving us in so many directions. Now, based on last week, when I took notes on what we were doing in terms of the black banks and credit unions that we have in this country, now, we have 50 states, of course, and of the information that I got last week, we have 50 black banks and credit unions. That is sufficient for us to automatically do what you're saying. So my question is, why is it since we have 50 banks in this country, not every state has this, but at least we have 50 banks and 50 states. Why aren't we educating our people of going to just what you said, going to these banks? Is there something that these banks themselves aren't given power to do to keep us from doing what you're just saying?
No, since you just said it, educating our community, informing our communities. Listen,
right.
we're talking about originated from us, Black Belt Wall Street. We are unique. We are historical. What we're presenting, no black politicians, no economics. Economics is something that black folks don't get into. We give that away.
I have a question there then. How many of our 50 states do we have at least a director in? Because if that is the case, whatever states have a director, we have here these states, it's like 28 of them, 25 to 28 states that actually have black banks and credit unions. We could go to our directors of those states and let them know these are black banks and credit unions in your state, because we have their names. Alabama has Alabama, America, Citizens Trust, Commonwealth Trust. Every one of these states, we have the names of the banks. Let us see next
who is at least a director in those states that I just mentioned a while ago, I can get in touch with them. In turn, we can start working on finding out how we, and it shouldn't be that difficult to do, to find out how we'll let at least the citizens of that state know that we are trying to work at using our monies better, and these are African-American banks and credit unions that can help you to use your money. We already know the states. We know the banks and credit unions. We just need to know the directors next who can then start giving out these information for the availability of these black banks and credit unions, as we said earlier, small steps.
Let me see, sis. Let me just say this. When I select, and I did, everybody that is a state director, other than Isaiah, because he was with me right from the start. But when I went out here and selected every a director that we present on this program every week, I knew who I was selecting. I didn't just tell you guys to become state directors because of who is who. No, you guys have something special. I'm hoping to bring as much of it out over you as I possibly can. But especially you, Miss Juan, you are, and brother, and having you and Brother Rush, both of you guys, I saw an intelligence. And I, you being my sister, you taught me. But I saw an intelligence in you two that I just need to see if I can see you guys see it my way. And if we can start seeing things our way, I look for your – see, in other words – we got to inform these folks. We got to these even the banks, the communities, and therefore a letter of introduction, or whatever it takes for us to get in touch and say, look, such and such banks, we are going to be a lobbying, or we are going to be acting as a liaison to have depositors to start putting their monies in your banks. But at the same time, we need your participation back to these depositors. These depositors need to know that you as bank owners are participating. And now you have businesses, and in this case we have the few banks that are incorporated and the community. You see, these banks that are incorporated right now, and many of them have been around ever since Black Belt Wall Street, ever since Booker T. Washington. That's when they got started. But the reasons they are in such a low business advancement is because, like any business person, if I'm a banker may not be a good marketing representative. A banker may not be a good salesperson. I know as a financial planner, and you start talking about stockbroker and an insurance broker. An insurance broker is out here at everybody's house. Everywhere you go, you can almost, they're patting you down there on the back, giving you their cards. But how many stockbrokers, Merrill Lynch's and what have you, the ones up there in New York and all like that, how many of them do you see knocking on your doors or patting you on the back? You see, they're too conservative to do that. They think they're too good to do that, but you take that insurance broker, he is the one that is, the insurance companies are the ones that create the financial institutions in this country. And that's why the insurance companies are so big and so powerful. They're the ones who run the country. So, again, it's the same thing with bankers. I work, my license is with banking, securities, and insurance. That's what I have to study, and that's what I have to study with bankers. When I go to classes and we have to get our CE credits, you're going to see bankers in the classrooms. You're going to see stockbrokers in the classrooms. You're going to see CPAs in the classrooms. And you're going to see financial planners like myself in these classrooms. And we all are learning, including real estate brokers, and we all are learning the same financial principles. But now, when it comes to leaving the classrooms, who is going to take this information out into the markets? And that's what's happening here. So when you say, why isn't the banks or why isn't this person, why isn't the community well informed, they may be a little, they can't do it. Some folks say, I'm no good at this. So what we're talking about on this station is unique, and it's bringing ideas that folks just haven't heard, especially black folks. They haven't heard this type of because why? You don't have too many financial professionals taking the time to share community concerns. Most financial professionals, and I mean, I can't knock them because I'm one, but when I retired from building a clientele, when I retired, I said that I wanted to give my experience to the community. And for the last 10 years, along with all the associates that I have around me, this is what we've been doing, sharing our professionals. And I'm saying I got some, we don't have a whole, it's not 100 of us. It's not even 50 of us. But the ones that we have right now and what we are collectively all talking about, let's do this and let's do that, because very good ideas, and everybody now is beginning to see and the importance of finance and building finance, and this is what's going to get this job done. But no, nobody else. I'll be honest with the black caucus is not capable of this. They're not capable of this. But I am saying something I am beginning to hear a lot. You're beginning to hear now more about black business opportunities. You're beginning to hear that word black business opportunities now, even from your Jesse Jackson Juniors. You're beginning, but when it comes to finance, banking, securities, and insurance and real estate, it's just something that we have never had those discussions. And that's what must change. But somebody's got to bring about that change, because if not, like you said, the Hispanics will take over your communities by bringing in large groups, and all of these folks that's coming into this country will be taken over, and you know they're coming to the black communities because the white folks ain't going to have them. The white man is Donald Trump and them is going to go to war.
May I speak?
No, please do.
That's where we got to establish our own independence. Just like they had their independence, if we can't have true independence, we need to work on a degree of independence, because that's the only way it's going to work for us at this point. We can go out here and we can buy up the next 45 blocks. But if we can't secure what we're investing our monies in, we're still not doing anything but building more wealth eventually for them. So let's think about a degree of independence and how do we go about getting a little bit of that. That's the only way.
This is Brother Nadir. Do you have a state director in Alabama?
No, we don't.
Okay. I would like to be, necessarily I don't have to be the state director of Alabama, but I like to work with Alabama as well because, that's where I'm from.
Oh,
and I think what the Sister Swan's question was, we're talking about these things, but if we don't have directors in other places, maybe with our connections with people in those places, we need to really start working on that to get the involvement in each state to get this thing rolling. Because like I said, and I know we're running out of time, it's getting close to the top of the hour, but we've got to make some moves. And again, it's group economics you were talking about. Why is it that black people, we go into banks? Because individually we don't have a lot of money in the banks. Collectively we do, but a lot of individuals don't have a lot of money in the bank. And then we don't have trust funds that white people have. We don't have some collateral that a lot of white people have individually. But we've got to group collectively. And like I said, me being from Alabama, the people I know in Alabama, I would definitely like to help with Alabama. I know it was just a few banks there, and I have it in my notebook, but God willing, I would just want to encourage us to let's get the ball rolling with action.
Yeah, right.
Very good, and I agree, because based on what I've said tonight, because I do things very simply, I used to say to my students, kiss, kiss, keep it so simple. From what we said tonight, I already know what I'm going to implement, and it will cost pennies, less than pennies, to do what I have in mind. So that part is easy. The only thing I need to know now is, who is the director of the states? And even if some of those states do not have banks, I already have that. It might even increase with ones we don't know, with banks, with black banks and credit unions. Let me know the names of each one of those directors, and I will tell them what I have to do, and it's going to cost them less than pennies to do what I have in mind.
Okay. Well, like I said, when it comes to informing folks as whether they wish to participate, you have the same talent that I see. Invite these folks, bring them to New Africa Black Belt, but the biggest thing, all of us, we got to be members of New Africa Black Belt Wall Street. So we need your memberships, brothers and sisters. But at the same time, you're right. We need to have directors. We want directors all over this country, and it's up to you guys to spread the word. Invite folks to come on. The more they hear, the more they, why not put your monies in black banks? It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
So again, we thank you, Sister Aisha. I'm sorry. We got a second if you want to just say good night to us, but I promise you, have you back, Sister. I'm sorry, but sometimes
yes,
sometimes. We have to express ourselves.
This has been an excellent show tonight, and I'm really excited to have heard it. And next week, we'll talk about some of the economic ramifications of climate change disasters and how that is beginning to affect us personally. But this has been a great show, so please, no apologies are necessary because we're all trying to do the same thing, and we are working as a team here. So thank all of you very much, and I look forward to, of course, next week and even in between before next week, sometime I talk to various members and we talk about things as things develop. And there's a lot that has developed recently that we need to talk about in the climate change in the financial world. So, no, I'm very satisfied and very happy to have been here tonight. And I thank a lot for my health to be here.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself. We need you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, indeed.
Directors and all of our listeners, continue and remember, spread the word. If you could bring five more representatives on with you next week, and five the following week, and try, you know, the business folks, of course, but at this point, we need our community. Thanks so much, all of you, and until next week, we will just continue.
Just thank the Lord.